Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, October 1, 2022. Viewpoints. Amy Stretcher Burks, City Council, District 4 candidate. Partnerships aren't new, should continue for future Midlanders. Public-private partnerships show that Midland is a unique community where the foundations, corporations, organizations, individuals, and service clubs make a conscious effort to make Midland a better community. Currently, the most talked about public-private partnership is Centennial Park. Many restaurants and shops have opened adjacent to the park. The activity in the area has certainly increased, and more people are enjoying the atmosphere downtown. Every week, I talk with other families, and they mention how they were playing at the Centennial Park or their kids were enjoying the splash pad. The city is correct in reaching out to people and organizations in the private sector who want to help. This allows the city to tap into a company's expertise and resources. The city is attempting to stretch taxpayers' dollars to make them go further. Projects must be financially sustainable in the future and not be allowed to fall into disrepair. This must be part of the planning process. Another notable public-private partnership is the Chris Davidson Opportunity Park. The park is located adjacent to the Bush Tennis Center at 5700 Briarwood Avenue. The park is on a four-acre tract of land donated by the Henry Foundation. The city contributed approximately 10% of the cost of the park, and the remaining funds were raised by the private sector. These partnerships allow Midland to have first-class facilities without placing the entire burden on the taxpayer. Even though this idea seems new, public-private partnerships have been around for quite some time. Midland has led the way by utilizing public-private partnerships, and its success has been mostly because of the generosity and caliber of Midlanders themselves. The city has had partnership agreements for years with the Midland United Girls Softball Association, the Greater Midland Football League, Midland Junior Baseball Association, the Midland Soccer Association, Midland Softball Association, West Texas BMX, the YMCA of Midland, and Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin. The members of these organizations put in a very large number of volunteer hours to provide recreational activities for thousands of Midlanders. The agreements with the city and these organizations would not be possible without the volunteers. When I was growing up in Midland, I played in the MUGS program. Nearly everyone I knew growing up in Midland participated in one or more of the activities provided by these organizations. My parents, along with many of the other parents, volunteered as coaches, being a dugout parent, and working in the concession stand. My daughters are currently playing t-ball and soccer, and my husband and I are volunteering. The point is that public-private partnerships are not new in Midland, and have proven highly successful due to hundreds, if not thousands, of dedicated Midlanders. If elected, I want to assist these organizations in any way I can so partnerships like these can continue. Activities like this are important to me, and I want the people involved to feel free to contact me to see what the city can do to enhance the activities they provide. James Garrity, City Council District 4 candidate. Public-private partnerships can be expanded into District 4. In August 1999, I moved to Midland after acquiring several Domino's pizza stores. Standing in line at the only Midland Starbucks location inside Barnes & Noble, I listened to two Exxon employees saying to each other how they could not wait to get back to Houston and leave Midland in the rearview mirror. The oil economy was a hot mess, with oil priced around $10. For years, I have heard this quote, "There is nothing to do in Midland." We have seen native sons and daughters say that as well, and they moved off to make a life away from Midland. I believe that part of their attitude was quality of life and the lack of choices the community had to offer in 1999. Whether it was entertainment, sports, or academic choices, the larger metropolitan areas had more to offer. Over the years, that has changed, and now it will get even better. Fiscal limitations. For years, we hear that the City of Midland needs more tax revenue in order to operate and meet the goals set forth in the city budget. In fairness, many areas of responsibility were ignored during the bust cycles in our economy due to reduced sales tax collections and revenues from oil production within city limits. As Midland has grown, so has the need for better public facilities, schools, new shopping choices, and new housing options. This includes sports facilities and parks. That takes money through bond elections. But it's not about trusting the city or not. Private money in support of community improvements is a good thing for Midland. Oil companies play an important role in our city, whether it is revenue to the city or the employment of its citizens. When the oil businesses and foundations want to give back financially to help better the city, especially in parks that provide playing fields for children and young people, we should applaud that gesture. We will have a state-of-the-art sports complex that will enhance our community and have a magnetic effect to bring teams from across West Texas, the Panhandle, and Central Texas and visit Midland. This means more economic benefits to businesses that would collect sales tax and, in turn, bring revenue to the City of Midland. With this private-public initiative at Hogan Park, the city will be able to focus funding for other city needs. This initiative only enhances the community, and companies that financially benefit from being here are giving back to the community. And we do not need a bond election for parks like the one defeated several years ago. Saving taxpayer money should be a goal for city government. In the end, this is a win-win solution. How does it relate to District 4? District 4 does have a couple major sports-related parks in Southwest Midland, Beale Park, which has maintenance issues with its skate park and other issues, and the newer football soccer fields at the stadium complex. It would be beneficial to find smaller amounts of private money to sponsor Beale Park and financially assist in the repair and upkeep of this important park with its soccer and baseball playing fields. The private-public partnership could help District 4. The northwest area of District 4 is sorely lacking a destination-type park that could provide visitors with family exercise options and a place to go to spend time in nature. That is the Nueva Vista Wetlands on the golf course. The golf industry is financially struggling. This course is losing money, and the city-owned Hogan Park Golf Course loses money as well. A viable solution needs to be considered, and the pathway associated with the Hogan Park project should be considered to solve Nueva Vista. I think we may have an opportunity to secure the site through a private-public opportunity to have a natural area be beneficial to all in District 4. The northern portion could be developed, and the southern portion where a sizable green space could be in place between the current neighborhood and future development. Roughly half of the land is a flood area, and currently there are two large ponds that stay full most of the year. There are active water wells on site that could keep the water levels up. These two ponds would be the largest bodies of water in our city park system that could be used for fishing. There could be playground equipment, walking, bike paths, ramadas, workout stations, picnic areas, and more trees. I would encourage the next mayor and council to seek a mutual solution to the golf course issue. Allowing the owner to sell the northern portion along the new Wadley extension to developers and provide an off-ramp for the remaining natural green space that is a flood area could be a solution that private money may want to invest in. In conclusion, I think more public-private partnership opportunities will give Midland an opportunity to improve the quality of life for people who settle here. I would promote the idea as a city council member to expand these partnerships to include District 4.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram, Health and Wellness for Wednesday, October 5th, 2022. Wonder what the mammographer is thinking? Have you ever wondered what your mammography tech is thinking? We are x-ray techs first, but chose to train in mammography. The mammographer spends many hours diligently perfecting her skills in breast positioning and imaging techniques. As the years pass, she learns to cry with patients when they are scared and learns empathy when they are frustrated. She loves what she does, and not a day goes by that she doesn't think about the patient that left that morning with a cancer diagnosis. Yet she remembers that there are many more patients that need to be screened, so she keeps treading forward. Though sometimes she is pressed for time, she still looks back at the end of the day and wonders if she did enough. Was she a good technologist, team member, coworker, and friend? Despite common belief, she tries diligently to get the best images with as little discomfort as possible. Sometimes she is quiet and not too talkative because she is concentrating to make sure her patient's exam is as close to perfect as possible. She wants everyone to get the best quality she can perform. Anything she doesn't get a picture of could be cancer that might be missed. It may seem that she is tugging and pulling and maybe even struggling. It is so she can make sure the radiologist can get her patients the best diagnosis. Many mammography techs chose to work in mammography because they have had family members with breast cancer. It is personal for her. She wants everyone to get screened. She wishes she could save everyone, but she knows she won't be able to get everyone to agree to a mammogram. She reminds them to do their self-breast exams monthly and sends them on their way in hopes they will change their mind and get screened. She prays at night that she did her best so that no cancers were missed. She really cares and hopes that her patients know when they leave her department. She has the ultimate poker face. She just completed a patient's exam, and she knows that the patient will receive life-changing news soon. Yet she smiles and tells the patient, "We will get the results to her as soon as possible." After the patient leaves, she makes a quick call to the radiologist and asks them to look at the exam. Her fears have been confirmed. She remains calm and makes a call to the patient. When the patient asks what's wrong, she simply says there is a new area that we need to get more imaging on. She opens up her schedule book and overbooks tomorrow morning's schedule so the patient will get quick results. All this time, she knows her news will not be good, but she remains calm. She goes to the work area at the end of the day, thinking about what the next day holds in store for her. She wonders if her cancer patient will return tomorrow morning. She thinks about her teammates and worries about them as well. She is grateful that there are so many people working together to save women's lives. She hopes someday for a cure, even if it means she won't have a job. She always prays that better imaging techniques will be discovered that will detect cancer earlier. As a mammographer, I am proud I work with a great team of receptionists, technologists, nurses, and doctors. Our center offers every patient comprehensive care. We have multiple different disciplines that work closely with us, providing care across multiple fields. Midland Surgical Associates, DX Laboratory, West Texas Therapy, Texas Oncology, and Reconstructive Surgery. I am proud to be a part of the Breast Center at Midland Health. Misty Egg is the Breast Center Supervisor. What is atrial fibrillation? Nearly 3 million Americans are living with a heart condition called atrial fibrillation, according to the American Heart Association. And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that number could be as high as 12 million by the start of the next decade. September was National Atrial Fibrillation Awareness Month. But what is atrial fibrillation, and how do you fix it? A normal heart rhythm should beat like a steady drum. Atrial fibrillation is like a chaotic drum beat. It's a bum, 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 says Dr. Christopher DeSimone, a Mayo Clinic cardiologist. Quote, so what you're having is you're having heartbeats that are going sooner or shorter, bum, bum, or longer, bum, 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 bum. And what's that doing is it's altering the ability of your heart to fill and your heart to pump blood effectively, end quote. That can put patients at greater risk of blood clots, heart failure, and stroke. Quote, the heart is like a house. You have the upstairs, you have the downstairs, and you have electricity going on at the top of the heart, end quote, says Dr. DeSimone. Quote, and it's coordinated to beat and pump in a fashion so that blood gets to the rest of your body by going from the top down through the middle of the heart, out to the bottom of the heart, into the basement. The top chambers of the heart are where the problem lies for atrial fibrillation. There are many causes, such as high blood pressure, diabetes, or even sleep apnea. Often patients are unaware they have atrial fibrillation. Quote, sometimes they'll describe to me that they feel fatigued, end quote, says Dr. DeSimone. Quote, they're more short of breath, they feel like they're getting older. They feel like they haven't been as active, but really what they're feeling is not effective blood pumping, end quote. Treatment is individualized for each patient and may include medication, administering an electrical shock to the heart, or a procedure called catheter ablation, which scars the heart tissue that's creating the erratic signals. LDN latest to win DAISY Award. Midland Health congratulates the latest DAISY Award winner, Riche Layton, BSN-RN. Riche works in the labor and delivery unit and was nominated for the prestigious DAISY Award by a patient who was powerfully impacted by the care received from Riche. The patient wrote the following. Quote, Riche was a rock star. She came on shift as I was in the trenches of Pitocin contractions. My goal was to labor and deliver unmedicated. She made sure that happened. She helped reposition monitors, coached through contractions, helped me stay clean, helped push and celebrated so big when little man arrived. In the middle of the night, I had prayed for the nurse that would be in the room when he arrived, and that would be the best fit for my husband and I. Riche was that nurse for us. A godsend, an answer to prayer, the best. End quote. The DAISY Award is an international nursing recognition program created to honor nurses who provide extraordinary compassion and care. Midland Memorial Hospital is one of more than 4,900 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing worldwide that recognizes their nurses with this prestigious award. Anyone in the facility can nominate a nurse, be it a patient or visitor, another nurse, physician, or any other staff member. Anyone who experiences or observes extraordinary compassionate care being provided by a nurse. It is because of Riche's compassionate and caring efforts that her patient experienced a level of care that exemplifies the impact nurses have in creating an environment where patients and families feel at home. Congratulations, Riche Layton. Have you recently had an extraordinary experience with a nurse at Midland Memorial Hospital? Submit a DAISY Award nomination at midlandhealth.org/main/DAISY-award-nomination-form. Ask a doctor. Reasons why you pee so often during the middle of the night. Q. I keep waking up in the middle of the night to pee and worry it's affecting my sleep. Why is this happening? A. This is a question I hear all the time, and one possible cause might surprise you. Nighttime urination, also known as nocturia, can affect men and women at any age. The more common causes are entirely benign, though nocturia can also be triggered by certain health conditions and medications. In fact, one of the strongest diuretics known to man isn't something you eat or drink. It's actually something that can be released from within your own body. Sleep apnea, a condition that affects breathing during sleep, can lead to lower oxygen levels in the bloodstream. The more common causes usually aren't anything to worry about. Here are some of them, as well as other medical conditions linked to nocturia. Fluid intake. In adults, a common cause of nighttime urination is fluid intake before bedtime, or in other words, what goes in must come out. Fluid you drink is filtered through the kidneys and stored in the bladder as urine until you pee. Drinking lots of fluid before bedtime is a recipe for waking up with an urge to urinate, since the bladder only holds about 12 to 14 ounces. By restricting fluids after dinner time, these urges might be reduced. Bladder irritants, diuretics. There are many foods and drinks whose byproducts are passed into the urine and can irritate or, quote, tickle, end quote, the bladder, producing an urge to pee. This includes teas, green, white, and black, spicy foods, and artificial sweeteners, such as the calorie-free sweeteners you might add to your drinks or those that come inside diet or sugar-free foods. In a study involving rats, these sweeteners were shown to increase bladder muscle contraction, which causes an urge to urinate. Caffeine is another common culprit, whether it's in coffee, tea, or soda, and so is alcohol. Both are known diuretics. Medical conditions. For men over age 50, the most likely cause is prostate enlargement. Urine passes through a small channel in the prostate on its way out of the body. With age, the prostate can enlarge and compress that channel. As a result, the bladder may not empty completely during urination and may fill back up quickly. The bladder can also become overactive over time from having to push hard through a tight prostate. Several factors can contribute to nighttime urination in women, including pregnancy. Pelvic floor dysfunction and pelvic organ prolapse, which occur more often with age, can also cause frequent and urgent urination. Those who have given birth vaginally are at an increased risk of these conditions, as are those who have gone through menopause, which can cause hormonal changes that can impact the pelvic organs. What to do about it? For people who are bothered by peeing once a night, I suggest avoiding caffeine after lunch and skipping a nightcap before bed. Try keeping track of what you eat and drink to identify what your own triggers might be. But if you're waking up twice or more times, or you think you might have sleep apnea, a prostate issue, or any other medical condition related to nocturia, connect with your primary care provider or a urologist and get evaluated. They'll run a urine test and check to make sure your overall health is in order. Mayo Clinic Q&A. Treatment options for sinusitis. I've had ongoing nasal congestion and mucus for the past several months. I thought it was allergies, but my doctor says I likely have acute sinusitis brought on by allergic rhinitis. I was advised to try non-prescription medications to relieve my symptoms rather than antibiotics. What is the difference between this and a normal sinus infection, and what are the best treatment options? A. Acute sinusitis causes the spaces inside your nose, the sinuses, to become inflamed and swollen. This interferes with drainage and causes mucus to build up. With acute sinusitis, it might be difficult to breathe through your nose. Other common symptoms include a feeling of pressure, pain, or discomfort in the area around your eyes, cheeks, nose, and forehead that worsens when you bend over. A headache also is common, as is tooth pain. Also, you may have thick, clear, yellow, or greenish mucus from the nose, runny nose, or down the back of the throat, post-nasal drainage. A change in mucus color alone does not indicate bacterial infection. The common cold mostly causes acute sinusitis. Unless a bacterial infection develops, most cases resolve within a week to 10 days. Home remedies may be all you need to treat acute sinusitis. Sinusitis that lasts more than 12 weeks despite medical treatment is called chronic sinusitis. Over-the-counter medications may relieve facial pain and sinus congestion associated with acute sinusitis. Several types of products are available. Most common therapies. Decongestants. Decongestants work by narrowing blood vessels to reduce inflammation and swelling that cause sinus congestion. These medications are available in liquids, tablets, and nasal sprays. Use them for no more than 3 to 5 days at a time. Intranasal steroids. Intranasal steroids reduce inflammation, which also can reduce mucus production. They work best when used consistently for more than 1 week, so consider starting at the first sign of symptoms and continuing daily until symptoms resolve. Pain relievers. Aspirin, acetaminophen, or ibuprofen may relieve pain caused by pressure buildup in the sinus cavities. Always use over-the-counter products as directed. Also be aware that many over-the-counter cough and cold products contain several medications. It is important to compare the active ingredients if you take more than one product. Other home remedies. Inhale warm water vapor. Drape a towel over your head as you breathe in the moist air from a bowl of warm or moderately hot water. Or take a hot shower breathing in the warm, moist air. Apply warm compresses. Place warm, damp towels around your nose, cheeks, and eyes to ease facial pain. Drink plenty of fluids. Consuming additional fluids dilutes mucus secretions and promotes drainage. Use a saline nasal spray. Saline washes or sprays can remove thick secretions and allow the sinuses to drain. Use a nasal sinus rinse. A neti pot or other nasal sinus rinse is a container designed to rinse debris or mucus from your nasal cavity. These are often available in pharmacies and health food stores as well as online. Be sure to use filtered water and talk to your healthcare professional to see if nasal rinsing is right for you. Most people with acute sinusitis get better without antibiotics. If symptoms persist for more than 10 days, or you develop fever or worsening sinus pressure, drainage, or facial pain, particularly after a period of improvement, your healthcare professional may need to evaluate you further for a bacterial sinus infection. 2,000 steps could help keep premature death at bay. For every 2,000 steps you take each day, your risk for premature death may fall by 8 to 11%, according to research published in the journal JAMA, Internal Medicine. Along with the results from a related study published in JAMA Neurology, the researchers also found that walking more, accumulating up to roughly 10,000 steps a day, was linked to a reduction in the occurrence of cardiovascular disease, including heart disease, stroke, and heart failure, 13 types of cancer, and dementia, Both studies involved about 78,500 participants, all middle-age and older, who wore a device on their wrist to measure physical activity and whose health was monitored for a median of 7 years. Taking 10,000 steps a day, roughly 4 to 5 miles, depending on a person's stride, has become a common health and fitness goal. The new studies, however, found that health benefits also can be achieved by taking fewer steps. For instance, walking about 9,800 steps a day was found to lower risk of dementia by about 50%, but dementia risk was cut by 25% for those who walked as few as 3,800 steps daily. Model: Type 1 diabetes cases worldwide could double by 40. Using a new model for projecting the number of people with type 1 diabetes worldwide, members of an international team of researchers estimate up to 17.4 million cases by 2040, double the number of people known to have the disease today. A study published in The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology says 8.4 million people now live with type 1 diabetes, which occurs when the pancreas produces little or no insulin, leading to a buildup in blood sugar that can be disabling or fatal. Symptoms include excessive thirst and urination, blurred vision, exhaustion, dry skin, and unintended weight loss. Tracking has improved in recent years, but type 1 diabetes is underrepresented. In addition, because many countries don't collect type 1 diabetes data, the numbers have historically skewed toward North America and Europe. To counter the spotty numbers, the researchers created a model that used the available data to predict type 1 diabetes worldwide. The estimates counter some myths about the disease, which was once called juvenile diabetes, because its onset often occurs during childhood.
Prostate medication incites sexual side effects with men. To your good health for Wednesday. Dear Dr. Roach, I have been taking tamsulosin and finasteride for prostate issues. Nothing major, just the usual middle-of-the-night urges and frequent urination. Could these medications contribute to my new concerns of erectile dysfunction, ED, changes in ejaculation, and or my occasional bout with kidney stones? My urologist has suggested Viagra for the ED, but will it address the issue with ejaculation? Dr. Roach writes, finasteride is well known for causing sexual side effects. Up to 20% of men will have erectile dysfunction, while another 5% will see ejaculatory changes, including decreased volume. Decreased interest in sexual activity is another side effect that is not uncommon. Sildenafil Viagra is effective for the erectile dysfunction in most men, but it does not directly affect libido or changes in ejaculatory function. There is no effect I know of with either tamsulosin or finasteride on kidney stones. Niece keeps secret life hidden from her mother. Dear Abby for Wednesday. Dear Abby, my niece Amanda is 19 and fairly close with my daughter Haley, who is 18. Since graduating from high school and through her first year away at college, Amanda has been going out of town to meet men she meets online. Amanda shares her location with Haley through Snapchat in case something happens. My niece is doing this without letting anyone other than Haley know, and often uses my daughter as a cover to her parents. These aren't just dinner dates, but usually weekends away from home. Haley always tells me when Amanda is away. We are both concerned about her behavior, as human trafficking is very real. I've tried talking to Amanda about it, but she insists she's safe and knows what she is doing. My question is, should I tell my sister, her mom, or not? They don't really get along, and this will surely make things worse. Afraid for her in Ohio. Dear Afraid, Amanda is playing with fire. If your daughter were walking on a ledge 20 stories above the sidewalk thinking she knows what she's doing, wouldn't you want to be notified? Her father should be tipped off as well if he's in the picture. Someone needs to get through to that girl, who seems determined to put herself in harm's way. Dear Abby, I'm a 60-year-old female. Over the past 10 years, people have increasingly been calling me sir in public. I hate it. I go to the salon to get my hair and brows done and wear feminine attire and shoes. I usually carry a purse, but not always. I have an athletic build and I do wear t-shirts often. I taught physical education for 30 years. My response is, "My name is Susan. Do you have any other suggestions? It's making me crazy. This has been going on too long. Today, when it happened, I had been ready to make a purchase, but instead walked out of a furniture store because I was so offended. Their loss. All woman in the South. Dear all woman, you are handling these comments as adeptly as possible. The person who addresses you as the wrong gender should be rightly embarrassed when you respond that your name is Susan. Leaving a store rather than making an expensive purchase was also the right thing to do. You should not have to change your appearance if you don't wish to. You know who you are. Try handling the comments with humor and see if that works better. Dear Abby, my aging father lives hundreds of miles away from me. I try to call him every day, but it feels like my calls are not welcome. I'm the only person he has contact with other than his caregivers. Should I keep trying or give up? Discouraged daughter in California. Dear daughter, do not give up. Is this normal behavior on your father's part? If it isn't, he should be examined by his doctor to ensure he hasn't had a stroke or gone into a cognitive decline. It's very important you know his health status, as well as whether there have been other changes in his life that would account for his behavior. Pay him a visit if that's possible. I cannot stress this too strongly.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.